case this morning, and it is United States v. Avery Smart. Mr. Mohabit.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Amir Mohabit, appearing for the appellant, Mr. Avery Smart. This case comes before you after a three-day trial, and the charges pursuant to the two-count superseding indictment concern production of child pornography and attempted tampering with a victim. After what seems to have been a short deliberation, the jury convicted Mr. Smart of both counts, and ultimately he was sentenced to 300 months on count one, 240 months on count two, to be served concurrently for a total term of 300 months. Well, how did Mr. Smart get to the point of conviction? We submit to you because of errors committed by the district court, specifically on day two of that three-day trial. The court made comments that caused Mr. Smart not to have the benefit of his right to an impartial jury. There's a saying that a judge should not put his or her finger on the scale of justice or a thumb. In this case, the judge took the weight of the entire bench, thump, put it on the scale twice. Specifically, on day two, the record shows on page 23 of the record 118 of the trial transcript. The judge says, so while they are preparing that, meaning wiping down a witness stand as part of the COVID protocols, this is the victim in the case that will be testifying. We are, in order to protect her privacy, just going to refer to her by her initials. That was bolstering. That was the district court telling the jury what the jury should conclude.
Mr. Mohabit, let's assume that the comment shouldn't have been made, that the comments were improper. Assume you get over that hurdle. There was no objection, so plain error review applies here. Given the evidence, how can you establish that but for this error, the outcome of the proceeding would have been different? When the jury saw the photographs, the sexually explicit photographs, heard her testimony, knew her age, got the DNA evidence that he had fathered the child, given all of the evidence submitted here, how could you meet that high hurdle on plain error?
Few things, Your Honor, but I agree plain error is the standard. Also, on day two, on page 43, the court says after a government witness got off the stand.
The question is, assuming there was error in those, how do you meet the plain error standard? I think you were going on to the second comment of the court. Let's just take that off and assume they were improper comments, which I'm not sure, but let's assume that. How do you get around plain error?
We don't know that evidence you referred to would have made its way into the record but for the judge's second error. By telling the government, you did not move for the admission of anything except eight, meaning exhibit number eight. Are you going to do that through a different witness? Ms. Riepert says that's correct, Your Honor. The court says, all right, just making sure.
Mr. Hobbit, let me try the same question a different way. Wasn't there evidence put in front of the jury that your client sent a text message or an email or an instant message or I don't know what? And the instant message had in it the words, I'm on an exclusive photo shoot. And then attached to the message was an image, a sexually explicit image of the victim that the victim identified as her at trial. So that's the evidence in front of the jury. So my question is, how is that not overwhelming in your view?
that, we'll call it a written communication, that may not have been presented yet when these errors or one of these errors occurred, Your Honor. So looking back 2020...
On plain error, though, assume the jury credited the evidence that I just described. That, I mean, it seems overwhelming squared.
I think the chronology does matter, Your Honor. Now, perhaps what you're referencing is that under plain error, it does not.
No. The person in the picture that your client sent in the message said, "That's me. I was 15 at the time." So I know what the comments are. It's all briefed up. I get it. How do you show the outcome would have been different because of the comments, given that testimony and that evidence?
Your Honor, we're never going to know what the jury would have done but for the judge's comments. I don't think...
But you have to establish that. It's your burden on plain error to establish that but for the error, the outcome would have been different. And given the evidence that's been identified, how can you possibly show that?
Judge, Your Honor, St. Eve, the defense may have put on a case rather than not putting on a case after those comments. Mr. Smart may have chosen to testify.
Come on.
But we have to look at it. There's nothing in here. He certainly hasn't put in an affidavit saying, "I would have testified but for those comments." So you're speculating and asking us to speculate here. You've got to come forth with something showing that the outcome would have been different.
The way we get to the plain error standard is that there wasn't an objection at the trial.
Correct.
One of the things that I ask myself from time to time, especially on a case where I'm appointed and I was not the district court attorney like here, is what would I have done? In light of these particular circumstances, Your Honors, I may have also been too shocked to have thought fast enough on my feet to jump up to raise an objection.
But you had absolutely nothing objectionable to either of these comments. I don't even think we need to get to whether the plain error standard is satisfied here. There's no error to begin with. It's not an error for the judge to call the victim the victim.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree.
It may be in some egregious case, but in the mine run of cases with an underage victim of a child pornography offense, it's okay to call the victim the victim. And the judge did it only once here. And this just making sure comment is completely innocuous. She was making a procedural point about whether the remaining photos were going to come into evidence later on in the trial. There's nothing whatsoever that the judge did wrong here that is remotely objectionable.
If I may,
this should have been an Anders.
Well, Your Honor, I'm cutting into my rebuttal time, but I'll address the last two points you made if I can quickly. One of the titles of one of the charges is attempted tampering with a victim. So when the judge says this here is the victim, it's taken on the role of the jury.
There's no dispute about who she is and who is identified as the victim. The question is defendant's culpability. Her status is not in dispute here.
And I think totality-wise, the judge said things that channeled
what
the jury
are,
into...
Other than those two statements, don't give us one of these totality-wise arguments.
Those,
you're
those
saying
the
these two.
Two
statements were plain error.
Because the substance, the heart of this trial was this particular day, day two. Day one was picking the jury, day three was closings and verdicts. So this was the one day that was the meatiest, and the two errors occurred on that day.
What was erroneous about the judge's comments? There's no dispute about the victim's status as a victim.
It goes back to channeling to the jury the judge's thoughts that this defendant is and should be found.
It says nothing about the defendant's culpability. It just identifies the victim's status, which is undisputed. She's clearly a child pornography victim because she was 15 at the time the photos were taken.
I understand your point, Your Honor, but as an advocate, I must respectfully disagree.
It should have been an Anders. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Ruppert.
Thank you. Good morning. Laura Reppert on behalf of the United States. As this court indicated, this is here on plain error review. The appellant has a stringent burden here to show all four prongs of plain error, that the errors were errors, that they were plain, that they affected his substantial rights, and that they seriously affected the fairness, integrity, or public reputation of the proceedings. All four prongs have to be met here, and appellant has failed to satisfy any of the prongs. Prongs one and two is that it was an error and that it was plain. And the two comments that the appellant has identified as being errors, we would submit they're not errors. Chief Judge Sykes, as you just stated, calling the victim a victim, particularly where one of the charges is under 1512, which the label of the statute is tampering with a witness, victim, or informant, by labeling the person, the witness, as victim, that is not an error. It is certainly not plain error where appellant has been able to identify zero cases that say that referring to a witness as victim is erroneous.
Wasn't part of the context here to inform the jury as to why the next witness was going to testify under initials?
That's exactly right. And so after a full day of jury selection, we started off day two in the morning. Just before the jury entered, I had addressed with the district court about referring to the victim by her initials. Again, the nature of the proceedings, wanted to keep her name out of the record. There was no objection to that, and so that's how we proceeded. And so this was merely the district court informing the jury, this is the victim of the case, we're going to refer to her by her initials. And there's just no error in that colloquy that the district court had with the jury. And it's certainly not plain error where the appellant cannot identify a single case that referring to a witness as a victim is error. Again, the just making sure comment, the district court has an obligation as the gatekeeper of evidence to keep a running track of which exhibits are entered and admitted.
Ms. Reppert, just briefly, was what I was talking to Mr. Muhammad about, is that roughly correct in terms of what the evidence showed? Did he send an instant message or a text message?
He did.
Posting about the photos he was taking?
That's absolutely correct, Judge. During this trucking trip, which happened in late January of 2017, that the victim testified that she had accompanied the defendant on, the appellant on, they went from Illinois to California. There were photographs that were taken that the victim identified, saying, yes, that's me. Yes, Avery Smart took that photo. And it was her engaged in sexually explicit conduct, specifically the lascivious display of her genitals. And it was during that time frame, this approximate three-day trip, that they're going from Illinois to California, that he texts his friend, whose name was Deacon, and he says, I'm on a, quote, exclusive photo shoot. And accompanying that text message was a photograph of the victim engaged in sexually explicit conduct. So you're absolutely correct, Judge Scudder. That's exactly what the evidence was that was presented to the jury. So neither of these comments are plain error. And as this court touched upon, there was overwhelming evidence of the defendant's guilt. The victim was 15. She said she had been in a sexually explicit relationship with the appellant. She was pregnant with his child. That's how all of this came to light to the FBI. She said that appellant was 39 years old. She had engaged in a sexual relationship with him for a matter of months. DNA testing was done on the child. It came back as the appellant's child. And again, she identified 14 photographs at trial of her both clothed and unclothed, saying, that's me, and Avery Smart took those photographs, along with the text messages that were sent and the confirmation of this trucking trip otherwise found on the defendant appellant's phone. So there was overwhelming evidence. And in addition to the prongs three and four that the appellant has to show, in addition to this overwhelming evidence, there was also jury instructions that were provided by the district court, essentially saying, any comment I make, you should not take as an opinion on the evidence of this case or what your verdict should be. Those kinds of instructions were read three separate times to the jury, twice before opening and once before closing statements. Juries are presumed to follow instructions. There's no reason to consider or suggest that they didn't follow those instructions. So unless there are questions from the court, we think that there was no plain error. The appellant has failed to establish any of the four prongs. And so for that reason, this court should affirm the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. We'll move to our eighth case this morning.